I'm Jaina.
And I'm Sharon.
And together, we're Jazz's Begansi.
Moving you from Ansi to Gansi.
And today...
Wait, what are you doing? Did you start without me?
Yeah, I'm replacing you.
But why? What did I do?
I mean, you haven't been as into the podcast lately. You literally called in the opening last week. Wait. And I don't want to stress you out. So I replaced you with an AI. Meet Sharon.
Well, Sharon sounds stupid. You know what? I'm going on strike with the other writers. You can tell Sharon to do your grocery shopping too.
Oh, yeah, okay, no problem. Opening Instacart. Okay, are you ready?
No, I'm calling it in, right? That's what you said.
Come on. Hi, I'm Jaina.
And I'm Sharon.
And together, we're Jazz's Begansi.
Moving you from Ansi to Gansi.
Okay, seriously, I'm going to go replace you with a robot again.
I'm much better than the robot.
Act like it. Right now, you're about on par. Okay, well, today, we're talking about replacing things. We were talking about replacing games, but then I started talking about replacing Sharon, and the whole thing spiraled. But we're actually talking about replacing games.
Mm-hmm. Games that we have, I think we didn't discover the game, but we've played these new games that we don't have in our inventory that we're like eyeing, even though you technically can't buy games. So this is all. Just theoretical.
Yeah. We're living in this magical world where I can buy games, but also in this magical world, for some strange reason, if we buy a game, we have to like remove another one from the collection. That doesn't make sense to me. Like that you just go buy a new shelf. I don't understand. But this is the weird game that we're playing today.
Yeah.
So we each picked three games that are new to us this year or just, you know, that we have played previously and haven't bought that we really like.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to talk about what game would get the boot in our collection to make room for the new ones.
Well, I have to say that when I was debating on or deciding on which games to boot, I hadn't really chosen the games that I least enjoy to boot out. I was trying to find a sort of an analog game to replace.
Yeah, same for me. Like, it would have been very easy. There's lots of games that I could be like, it's fine. We can let it go. But yeah, I was trying to find, something this kind of replaced, like, similar mechanisms or theme or style or something.
Yeah, and really depending on the game I chose, I chose with a substitution of similar themes, and sometimes it's substitution of similar mechanism. So I really don't have a standard principle on what to look for to replace each of the games. It was mostly based on whim, and I decided to be a bit of a chaotic monkey.
Yeah. Well, we can explain our reasoning as we go through.
Sure. All right.
Okay. Should I start?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I'll start with one of the games we had mentioned a couple episodes back when you, Sharon, had brought up this excellent question of, if you wanted to add that game, like what would it replace?
Mm-hmm.
So the first one I'll start with is 5-Minute Dungeon.
Hmm.
So that was a super quick, I don't even think you can call it a dungeon crawler. You're flipping cards from the dungeon pile. That's going to show you either an enemy or an obstacle or something. And it's going to show you a bunch of icons on it. Then everyone who's playing has a hand of cards that are unique to their character, whatever role they're playing, and everyone has to discard cards to match up enough cards that'll match up and or exceed the number of icons that the dungeon card shows. Of course, you have literally 5 minutes to get through this dungeon and beat the boss. So if someone tosses out a card with like 3 swords and you only need 2 and someone else ends up tossing 2 more swords out there, you can't go back. Everyone loses all those cards. So it's just kind of a quick speed game of trying to match what you can, play cards strategically while also going really fast. And it's just lighthearted fun.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the game that would replace is Magic Maze.
Oh, because of how chaotic and quick you would just need to get things done, and because everyone's just throwing things out on the table?
Yeah. So okay, I think because they're both real-time games. So in Magic Maze, you are revealing basically tiles of this mall, and everyone's playing – well, everyone plays every character, really. And there's four kind of fantasy characters, a dwarf, an elf, can't remember the rest of them, that are trying to steal items from this mall and then escape. But the catch with Magic Maze is every player, instead of controlling one character, they have, depending on how many players you have, they have one, two, three, four directions in front of them. And if you want a character to move a certain way, only the person with that direction in front of them can move them that direction. So the mall is broken up into little squares, and of course you have to navigate all the hallways and stuff. And the catch with this is that you can't talk at all. So the only thing you can do, if you're looking and you see this person needs to move a certain direction, they have this red wooden marker that you can slam down in front of someone and start banging it on the table to be like, you need to do something. And they're like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And it just, overall, it sounds so good and so fun, but I don't think it's ever really hit for us.
You really need to find the right people and also the right table. Mm-hmm. To do it. I found that it's usually a pretty fun game for me to bring to the office, especially for, you know, team building retreats type of game. I don't think it's a game that you necessarily go back again and again and again.
Well, and I think you're supposed to, because they have different scenarios. Yeah. Like, you increase the complexity as you go, but we've never really gone much past the first two or three.
No, you're right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so
I could see that. Both are pretty similar, so I could see that.
Yeah, I think Magic Maze is maybe a little more interesting, definitely better for that group, like team building type thing.
Yeah.
But 5-Minute Dungeon, I think, would just be much easier to get to the table and get played a lot more.
So 5-Minute Dungeon, real-time game, you're putting all these things to defeat different creatures within, mm-hmm. I'm assuming, within 5 minutes.
Yes.
Are you allowed to speak throughout? Are there any yes. other types of
Yeah, you can, barriers? You can't say like, oh, I don't think you can say like, oh, I have this card, but you can be like, oh guys, no, I got this. Things like that. But the one, when we played, our friend's copy had the curse expansion. So there were certain curses that might mean you couldn't talk, or you had to just use one hand, or you had to say waffle all the time. So normally, yes, you can talk. And then certain, I guess, dungeon creatures, certain bosses are harder than others. And they're, I don't know if they have all unique cards, or if the dungeon, I'm guessing there's like a base set and maybe you mix in some that are unique to that boss monster.
Huh.
Yeah. To make it harder or easier, you can put in more cards, fewer cards, events. There's lots of expansions that can make it harder or easier too.
Do we still have Escape of the Temple?
Escape Curse of the Temple, no.
Oh, if that was still here, yes. Would that be the first to go?
That would be much closer, yeah. Oh,
okay. Because I was like, that feels more close.
Than I think so, yeah. But we did sell that one.
Okay. All right.
All right. All right. You want to go with your first one?
Well, my first one was I got introduced it through Gobfest, and that's Dune Imperium. Worker placement, deck management, deck curating to a degree, because you can add cards into your deck.
Can you bit a
type of game? You sorry, what was that?
It's, yeah, kind of deck building.
Yeah, it's kind of deck building. It's a bit of a race to, I think, 10 victory points. I'm pretty sure they don't call it victory points. They probably call it something fancier. But essentially, it's a again, you know, deck curating, deck building, worker placement, and of course there's space cocaine involved with a street name Spice.
Obviously.
And I really quite enjoyed it because it really feels a little solitary, but then they add a little bit of conflict.
Yeah, it's a little more combative mm-hmm. and a little more interactive than
more
a lot
interactive, but not overly like war gamey combat yes. primary type game, which I think it strikes a really good balance. And, you know, I haven't read the books. I haven't even watched the movie. So I'm the IP itself doesn't, mm-hmm. it's, that's not a huge factor for me. I just simply enjoy the game.
Yep.
Fair enough.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah. I enjoy the game. There's also asymmetric starting player powers as well, which makes things interesting as well, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So, I searched and I had a little bit of trouble finding the right match. At one point, I looked at Reavers of Midgard, which is a completely different theme. It didn't really quite land, but I was like, no, I actually, even though we haven't played that game often, I enjoy that game quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so I ended on, let's think about theme. I know on Terraforming Mars, which is theme-wise, it's space and space. Mm-hmm. There's still some level of card management with Terraforming Mars, but especially since we have Terraforming Mars, the Ares Expedition, I felt like I'm going to keep the Ares Expedition because it's so much easier to get it on the table
compared to Terraforming Mars.
Okay. And I booted, in this theoretical exercise, I booted Terraforming Mars in favor of Dune Imperium.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. I just don't think, I was looking at our collection, I just don't think there's another game that's a better similarity compared to Dune Imperium.
Yeah, it's tough. It was hard to find games that felt similar, not just games that we would be like, oh yeah, I can get rid of that, that's fine.
Yeah. So, I mean, space to space, and we do have two versions of Terraforming Mars, and because of that.
Yeah, well, and I can see there's like some more interaction on the map and stuff with Terraforming Mars. Maybe not quite exactly the same, mm-hmm. but yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, there really isn't combat. There's some level of resource. Well, there's definitely resource management. But yeah, that's the closest game, I think, mm-hmm. as far as a substitute goes. Again, are there games that I enjoy much less than Terraforming Mars that I would, you know, boot out instead? Yes, but I just felt like for the spirit of the exercise, it didn't feel fair to just pick my three least favorite
games. Yeah. And I would rather have Dune Imperium than Terraforming Mars.
Yeah, that's fair. See?
So there we go. Mm-hmm. Okay. Excellent.
What's your next?
All right. So my next one was the other one that you had asked me about, what game would it replace? Uh-huh. And this is the Red Cathedral that would be coming into the collection.
Right.
This was my hardest. This was really hard. It doesn't quite feel like anything we have. It's such a small little box. It was tempting to just go pick another little box to replace it. Okay. But this packs a lot of game in a small box. So I don't know that I actually want to get rid of this game that we're kicking out, but I am going to say it anyways.
Okay.
I would replace Tolkien with the Red Cathedral.
What? A tea game.
What? So I like Tolkien.
Uh-huh.
I am really bad at it.
Oh, okay.
The gears intermeshing and having to plan so far ahead and that tight worker placement. I'm really bad. Like, for me, Tolkien is very much a plan ahead, long-term strategy game. There really just isn't much you can do that's tactical in that game. Literally, because you put a worker down on the gear and you have to figure out when you want to pull it off.
You know, that's interesting because for some reason, even though you kind of put something on and you wait for stuff to happen in future rounds, it doesn't infuriate me as much as playing Spirit Island and waiting for the long effects to come through.
Yeah, and I feel like because it's a little easier, I imagine the planning in Tolkien you'd be very good at. So here's why I am replacing it with Red Cathedral. Red Cathedral does have some of those long-term strategies. Like there is some area control in the palace that you're all building together. But I found Red Cathedral adds in a bit of extra dose of tactics that I really like. Because how you're getting resources in the game is this rondel with dice of different colors on them. And on your turn, one of the actions you could take is to take one of those dice, move it as many spaces there are pips showing on it. And then you're going to get the resources of that slot where it ends up. And if there's more dice there, you're getting more resources. So sometimes you may have like this long-term plan going, but you just see all these dice are lined up perfectly, especially in our four-player game where you just have to do that instead because it's just too good. So for me, I just found that balance a little more nice, but there's still long-term strategy because there's two types of victory points in Red Cathedral. I don't think I talked about this last week.
Okay.
And early on, one type of the victory point, you actually get bigger jumps around the victory point track, whereas the other one's always like a little one step. And the other one at the start of the game, you can take these really big jumps. So the person who actually won our game started just honing in on those, being able to take those really big victory point jumps early on. And I was like, oh, what a fool. Like, I have a great end game planned. I'm just going to slaughter him at the end. Yeah, no. So by that time, he'd lapped around the board and got to then go back to taking those big jumps again.
Oh,
so I think there's still some long-term strategy and planning on when you want to do things. But for me, that added dose of tactics just is going to make it more likely for me to get this to the table rather than Sulkin.
I've heard you pine over Red Cathedral so much before you actually played it, and you're still talking about it after you've played it. So I'm intrigued.
It's good. And honestly, that box is so tiny, we don't need to replace any. Like, it can just, it'll just slot right in there. So tiny.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So that was, I would be replacing Sulkin with Red Cathedral.
You'd win back a lot more space if that's the trade.
That's true.
Okay.
But again, I'm not sure I'm quite ready to get rid of Sulkin.
All right. Bonus points for you. My next game is Next Station London. It's really a flip and right route building network connection line drawing type of game. So the easiest replacement really was to find a similar game. And
so you're going to replace Railroad Inc., right?
No. Jeez, I can't do that. I was going to replace it with Kokoro, you monster. I would never replace Railroad Inc.
Oh, yeah, Kokoro makes more sense. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, because it's a flip and write.
I see.
Oh, are you saying any blank and writes are the same thing? Are you, like, racist?
I hear root building and assume you're talking about Railroad Inc. Like, I tuned out the beginning.
I was talking about Kokoro. Okay? Leave me alone. Leave my Railroad Inc. alone. So I was going to choose Kokoro, which is very similar. It's, again, card flipping and sort of root building in the way that you're trying to get to certain things, to harvest certain, I call it harvest, but worms or flowers. Connecting them to sanctuaries and connecting them to their respective gods or goddesses to earn endgame bonus points. The one thing is that there's just something about Kokoro that's particularly calming for me.
Yeah, because you're really good at it, that's why.
Okay, maybe. I don't know. It just evokes the sense of calm, and partially maybe it's because of the theme. You're just connecting worms and flowers to all these different little sanctuaries versus for Next Station London. It doesn't give me the same feel.
Next Station London, I think, has more things to consider.
Maybe. Maybe that's why. Yeah. But if I have to replace a game by bringing in Next Station London in, Kokoro's probably going to be on the chopping block for me.
Yeah, I can see that. Mm-hmm. I like Kokoro, but I think I'd rather have Next Station London than Kokoro.
Yeah, I won't go far.
Well, it's tough because Next Station London's on Board Game Arena.
Yeah, let's be honest. If we do buy that game, I'm not going to let go of Kokoro. We're just going to have more games. And we're going to buy more shelves and then have more games rooms.
Yes, yeah. We get each other.
Yeah, that's why we're together.
It's all just a mental exercise for us. Mm-hmm. Okay, so my final game is Final Girl.
Oh, your favorite. It's just the apple of your eye.
When I can buy games, I think this is the one that I will buy next.
I've never played it because it's definitely a solo game. So,
and the more I play solo games, there's two types of solo games I tend to play. The really short, quick ones, if I just want to kill, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes or something. You know, I've got lots of short, quick roll and writes, that sort of thing. Then I alternatively want to play like a big epic game like Too Many Bones or Final Girl.
Well, it's funny because my relationship with Final Girl usually is, you know, you're playing things solo, which oftentimes means that I'm out somewhere. I'm going to come home a little later. And every time I come home and you're still playing with that, you'd go, I'm not dead yet. Yeah. Or you'd send me texts in the middle of my evening out and you're like, I almost died. I almost got him, but I'm not dead yet. So that's really my entire relationship with this game.
I'm not dead yet.
Is that you're not dead yet and you're excited about it, but you just end up dying anyways.
That's true, but it's a long drawn out process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think I could have replaced Too Many Bones with Final Girl, because Final Girl, they're both very thematic kind of storytelling games, but Final Girl is just a little simpler and easier to get to the table. However, I would like to try Too Many Bones with you.
Okay.
Because it can be played as a co-op and plays really well two players. So I'm going to replace Gloomhaven with it.
Oh.
Also a co-op that plays two players.
Yeah. And,
okay. So Gloomhaven came out. Gloomhaven was at its height of hotness when we were just starting to deep dive into the hobby, collect games. So, of course, we had to have it. Like, we have to have the number one game on BoardGameGeek.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good. We got it. We actually played 4 to 5 scenarios, and it has sat on the shelf ever since.
Yeah, it's because of cats.
Well, cats, it's a lot of work to set up. Like, at one point, we're like, Friday nights, we're going to play Gloomhaven. But then you get to Friday, and it's 6 or 7, and you're looking at all of the – I painstakingly organized all of the terrain, got a plano box to organize all of the bits and bobs and standees and everything. But still, you look at it, and you're like, this is just too much to set up right now.
It's definitely very effortful. Mm-hmm. And for me, I haven't touched video games in years, but for me, it's like, if I want a Gloomhaven experience, I might as well just play a video game.
Yeah. I like it. It's a game that I think we'd have a hard time letting go. Yep. But if I get Final Girl, that's also going to take up a lot of shelf space. And it would, I mean, it might be bigger than Gloomhaven if I get both seasons. I get absolutely everything, but, you know, shelf space wise, and I think Final Girl will just get played a lot more often, because maybe come Friday night, I'm like, yeah, let's do it. I want to play something thematic. I want to get into something, and you're just feeling like, eh. Then yeah. I can just pull Final Girl out and play by myself.
Yeah, what's the allure of Final Girl? I know you've talked about this before, but I still don't quite get it.
I don't know.
Is it because of Buffy? Is it because you love Buffy so much and it is reminiscent of that?
I don't know. That's because I don't like horror movies. I tend to bounce, like, you know, Betrayal at House on the Hill is one of those.
Yeah.
Like, you know, YOLO, whatever. Like, things just happen and you don't have much agency. You have more agency in Final Girl, but it's still like a lot of dice rolling and things just go wrong for no reason.
Maybe we need to play it.
It just feels really thematic.
Maybe we need to play it one day together, just one character or something. Because I just wouldn't set up the game, learn the game, and play it myself.
Yeah, and every box just feels different. Like, when I played the first, I tried the Camp Happy Trails. And it really felt like one of those horror movies where, like, everyone's at a camp and there's this, you know, crazed killer going around wearing a pig's face. That was creepy. And just like, run away. Part. Oh no, he's going to hurt. Okay, we got to. And then the next one, I played the Evomorph in like a space station. And that's like Alien, basically. That's mm-hmm. recreating Alien.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, and now like it's the same vibe, but you get that different feel as the Evomorph like disappears and you don't know where it is or where it's going to pop up next. So now you're just like, okay, I don't know where it lost. Like, what? They could just. The two different boxes evoke very different feelings for me.
Huh.
And that's another reason why I'd want the full set, because some of the fun for me would be those different locations and different villains and just how they make, like, how they just make the game feel a little different every time and kind of evoke that sense of, that unique sense of horror that kind of matches that villain. But yeah, I really don't know what the appeal is. It also just kind of looks cool. Even though I don't like horror.
Yeah, because none of those themes.
No, nothing. Don't know.
But it's just, okay.
I don't know.
I'll give it a try because I don't get it.
I've never had a solo game either where I've just been that into, like, I roll the dice and I'm like, I'm literally at the table, like, cursing. Or like, yes, I can't believe that worked. Yeah, double bouquet. I got 2 successes. I can do this. I don't know.
It's that immersive, huh?
For me. And I don't know why.
Huh.
But it is.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Makes no sense whatsoever, but there you are.
My next game, I don't think has that effect on me. I quite enjoy it, and I've been really wanting to have it in the collection since I've played it on BGA. And this game is Art Deco. We've talked about Art Deco a few episodes already, but essentially it's a bit of a deck building, commodities,
yeah.
Speculation.
It's very much a classic deck building game, but as you're adding cards to your deck. That's like you're adding artwork mm-hmm. in different genres, and that's changing the value of that artwork as you add it to your deck. And then it's kind of deciding, ooh, when do I put and when and what do I put into this gallery mm-hmm. to earn the most points? And if you get rid of too many cards at the end of the game, depending on the value of all those artwork, you're also getting points for the cards that are still in your hand. And I've lost the game by putting too many cards into the gallery and not having enough left in my hand. So it's this really interesting, it really does feel like just a standard deck builder, but it adds in this extra layer of like, yeah, the speculation and commodities and when do I do what.
There's grace to the game because it is a deck building game, but there's also more to it because you kind of manipulate the market to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And you really need to time when you buy certain cards.
And react to what other people are buying or doing.
And be smart about where, when you're buying the cards to assert the most influence on the price of certain genres of paintings. So mm-hmm. I really, really enjoy it. And I think I really want this game because honestly, I don't think there is a game that we own right now that's quite like it.
Yes.
So for me, I'm like, okay, then I can't find like a mechanism replacement. So it must be theme. And so the first thing that actually came to mind, interestingly enough, was Rococo.
Oh.
I mean, it's both are pretty in the sense that Art Deco, it's pretty paintings and Rococo mm-hmm. is, you know, pretty clothes. But then I went, well, yeah, but it's not quite, that might not be really fair. And then I looked at The Gallerist, which is the most similar in terms of theme. And I'm like, but that's a completely different game mm-hmm, in terms of complexity mm-hmm. and heaviness and all of that. So I actually haven't really made a decision. It's either Rococo or The Gallerist, I suppose.
I mean, space-wise, either way, you're getting a lot of bang for your buck.
That's true. Again, are there games that I just really don't care for that much that I would happily replace it for Art Deco? Yes, absolutely. But in the spirit of what we're doing today, I think these two are the closest in our collection.
Yeah,
unless we just pick a deck builder.
I'd have just picked a deck. I might have picked like Dominion.
Oh!
Or Aeon's End or something.
Yeah, then if that's sort of, yeah, the case, then I might kick out Aeon's End.
Oh, see, I like Aeon's End. I know you don't. I'm not going to play it by myself, but I really like it. Okay, so you basically just have no answer.
Well, I have multiple. I'm like, maybe I'll just sit with the games between Aeon's End or Rococo mm-hmm. or The Gallerist.
As long as you don't kick them all out.
Yeah, no, no, I'll just pick one, I suppose. Oh. I think less so with The Gallerist. The Gallerist just feels like it's the most similar only because of the theme and the galleries and collecting art. Like, it's actually mm-hmm. thematically really, really similar.
Yeah, you're almost doing a lot of the same things, just
right
in a much different, more complex way.
Exactly.
And also dealing with, like, visitors to your gallery or mm-hmm. buying so and selling at the international art market.
I suppose the fairest substitution would be The Gallerist, but I don't think I'll give up The Gallerist for Art Deco, even though I really enjoy Art Deco and I feel like I'm going to get Art Deco out on the table much more than The Gallerist.
Yeah, that's true. My one that I ended up having to not talk about because I could not find a game that it would replace was The Great Split.
Oh,
it's just so different because that main mechanism is the I split, you choose.
Yeah.
And we don't have a game that centers on that.
If we had Tussie Mussie, would you replace that with Tussie Mussie?
Oh, that's hard because Tussie Mussie is just 18 cards.
Yeah, I know. So would you?
You know what? No.
Oh.
Because Tussie Mussie would get played, like with the two of us, Tussie Mussie would get played a lot more often. I can't see The Great Split being good with two. I think it's like there might be a variant way to play it, but yeah, I think Tussie Mussie would just get played a lot more.
Okay.
But
this seems like the same question, but if you had The Great Split mm-hmm. and you want to bring in Tussie Mussie, would you give up The Great Split then?
No. Because I feel The Great Split fits such a unique niche in our collection is that it plays up to 7 players. It's a little more thinky. So it can be a big group game, a little more thinky, still lots of interacting, chatting with your neighbors. And we just don't have anything like that. I just could not come up with anything.
Oh, okay.
Especially like a more Euro-y, you know, thinky kind of-ish game that plays up to seven players. Couldn't come up with it.
That's fair.
Yeah, and I think that's it. That wraps up our lists.
Our hypothetical exercise.
Our hypothetical exercise that's never actually going to happen, so it's all fine.
Well, I mean, eventually you can buy games again, no?
Yeah, but it wouldn't be very Gansy to kick out other games from our collection.
That's true. That's very true. I agree.
To bring in new ones. So.
I agree. So for those of you that like theoretical exercises, or those of you that are ruthless and actually just kick out your games, even though you promised them once upon a time that you would be their forever home and you've completely betrayed your relationship
anyone,
and went behind that promise, let us know.
I don't think anyone promises. What very few people promise to be
you
this
want
game's
to bring
forever
in.
Home.
And which games you want to kick
you
out.
You do understand that they're not pets, right?
You can let us know on BGG.
They don't actually have feelings.
We have a guild. We have Discord channel. We even have an email and Instagram.
I mean, maybe it's better for them to go to homes where they get played a lot.
Go to your show notes. That's where you'll find all of those things. And hey, while you're at it, give us a review and give us a rating wherever you catch your pods. So people that like to listen to two people yammering away about podcasts will be able to find us.
We don't yammer about podcasts. We yammer about games.
That's what I said.
On a podcast.
That's not what I said?
No.
Okay.
That's okay.
Okay.
It's late. I understand.
Until then.
Mm-hmm. Happy gaming.
Stay gancy.